You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show. My name is Charles Rose Jr., and we focus on breaking through limitations and barriers to get you to that next level of investing. With me is William Palmer, my amazing co-host. And in today's episode, our guest will be talking about how he reached financial independence at 25 years old and how he has become successful at investing in online businesses, strategic investing, and intentional spending.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show, where we guide you to financial freedom and break barriers in your investing to give you the secrets to success. And now, here are your hosts, Charles Rose Jr. and William Palmer.
Hi, everyone. It's Charles Rose Jr. with Breakthrough Investor, where we help you break through that next level as an investor. And with me today is William Palmer, real estate investor, coach, and the amazing co-host with Breakthrough Investor. William, what's up, buddy? How you doing today?
I'm doing great. You're doing some really good intros there, Charles. I appreciate it.
Hey, you know, it's also true, you know? Lottery is okay if it's true, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, William, man, I'm just super excited for our guest today, man. He's an awesome guy, very, very, very humble. I ran into his stuff online, and then you know, as I was speaking to Dustin, I mentioned this Cody guy, and Dustin was like, I know him too, man. He's a cool guy. He's awesome. I know him from FinCon and really cool guy and has so much knowledge and wisdom, like from a young age, man. So I'm super excited.
Yeah.
Are you excited?
Very excited. Honestly, I was kind of reading up on him a little bit. I'm really interested in, well, kind of how he basically quit his job, became a millionaire before 30, but the digital space is really interesting because it's not something I'm super familiar with, but it sounds like something that constantly gives you dividends. So I'm really, really, really interested in hearing a little bit about how that kind of projected him kind of ahead of where he was and kind of sets him up for success later on also.
Yeah. He totally, man. He started selling digital products in 2018 and became hooked after earning over $700 in 1 week. And then, you know, at age 25, he reached financial freedom or financial independence, whatever you want to call it. And it was through a combination of online businesses, strategic investing, and intentional spending. And so he is also the co-founder of Gold City Ventures, which shows you how to start and grow your own online business selling printables. And he is the co-host of the Financial Independence Show, also a real estate investor and a passive income expert and so much more. When he's not teaching others about passive income, you might find him traveling, working out, or starting a new business venture. So ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome to the show Cody Berman. Cody, what's up, buddy?
Dude, that was the best intro I've ever gotten. Thank you, Charles. Thank you, William. I hope I can deliver.
Hey, man, I have full confidence that you're going to fully deliver, man. It's so awesome, Cody, you know, just, you know, following you online and then meeting you at FinCon. And now we have you on the show, man. We are super blessed to have you with us today, brother, man.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's been a long time coming. I know Dustin has spoken highly of you. You've offered to host me in, you know, various parts of the world. And you're like, dude, come on down. And whenever you're in the area next, like come to this event, that event, I'm humbled. So appreciate you guys having me on. And let's get this party started.
Let's get this show started, man, for sure. And so, Cody, let's begin by sharing more of your story because, you know, I know you have an amazing story. And listeners, some people heard it before. I heard it. Every time I hear it, I just love hearing it over and over again because I glean something new. But tell us more about your investing journey and what initially made you want to do it.
So I actually got started with this whole entrepreneurship, investing, kind of all of it started with Tim Ferriss, the 4-Hour Workweek. I was 19 years old and my mom had read the book and she said, I think you'd really enjoy this book by Tim Ferriss. Didn't know who Tim Ferriss was, didn't know anything about the concepts, but that book single-handedly changed the trajectory of my life. And the biggest thing for me was the idea that the notion that your time didn't have to be linearly related to your money. So growing up, everyone made X dollars per hour. Like, oh, this person makes a lot of money. They make $50 per hour. this person makes $10 per hour. I make $7 per hour, or whatever I was making at the time. And Tim Ferriss said, you don't have to get paid in a dollars per hour type of way. Like, you can actually front load the work, front load your time, your money, your energy into things, into passive income vehicles that are going to pay you then dividends later down the road without you having to trade time. So there's things like real estate and building digital products and even content creating, like a blog or a podcast. You can create something once and that thing will pay you dividends for years, for decades to come. So that was kind of the beginning of my investing journey, realizing that, hey, I don't have to, every dollar I earn doesn't have to be associated with me trading a minute or an hour of my time. And then it was just kind of off to the races from there. Went down the rabbit hole of the FIRE movement, financial independence, retire early, discovered like Mr. Money Mustache and all of these other characters in the FIRE world, and started like maxing out all my retirement accounts. Hadn't stepped into the real estate world yet, but I was maxing out my like Roth IRA every single year from 19 on, investing a lot in my brokerage account. Didn't have a 401k at the time, so couldn't do that. And then a few years later, jumped into real estate. We can get into that whole story. It's kind of a funny story how I fell into real estate and just wanted to try it out. But yeah, man, that was kind of the very beginning of my investing days, was Tim Ferriss. It was the FIRE movement and just getting my money moving.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. So one quick question, like, before I forget, when you moved into the real estate world, did you end up keeping your 401k and all that other stuff, or did you cash that out?
I didn't even have a 401k. So I only worked in corporate for 7 months. I took a commercial real estate lending job when I was 22. I worked there for 7 months. I was like the frugal person you could imagine. I was, oh God, doing things that I wouldn't recommend other people do to save money, like sneaking in, you know, water bottles with alcohol in it to the bar to go hang out with my buddies because I don't want to be left out, but I didn't want to spend the money. So, but my savings rate was like 85-90%, no exaggeration. Wow. I was commuting from home during that 7 months. I had moved back in right after college just for a quick 7 month stint. So yeah, I only worked in corporate for 7 months, stockpiled. I think I saved up about $35,000 or $40,000 when it was all said and done. But my expenses were so low. So like the way I thought of it and the reason why I felt comfortable jumping into entrepreneurship, if you're only spending like $1,000 or $1,200 a month, which I was, and you have $40,000 saved up, you do the math, that's like 3 years of entrepreneurial freedom that I had built up if I were to keep my expenses at that same exact level. So I'm like, hold on. Like I was already an entrepreneur at the time. I was doing a bunch of side hustles. I had a blog, podcast, I was freelancing. I didn't even mention this, but I like started a disc golf manufacturing company while I was in college. So I was already doing all this entrepreneurial stuff. It just wasn't like my full-time thing. It wasn't bringing in a full-time income, but using that corporate job and saving up for 7 months and getting like $40,000 in the bank account gave me the confidence to take the leap. So very long-winded answer to your question, William. I did not have a 401k.
I like the answer. Let's say that.
Yeah, because it's crazy. You know, interesting. Like, you know, he didn't have a 401k, but, you know, a lot of people, you know, they don't even save up $40,000 in their 401k in that short space of time. You know, on top of that, you know, you also were making, you know, money from your side hustles. And so I think you had, you know, something better than a 401k. Yeah. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. No, I appreciate it. I kind of knew because, again, I had gotten involved with this whole FIRE movement pretty early on when I was 19. So when I was 22 getting that first corporate job, I knew I was only going to be there for a little bit. So I didn't even want to invest in my 401k because I didn't want the money to be tied up. So it was very intentional. I think I put the money in like a high yield savings account or something. It was a very liquid place that I could keep the money. And I didn't know what I was going to use it for. I didn't know exactly when I was going to quit. I just knew that I wasn't going to work there forever. I didn't like my boss's life. I didn't like my older coworkers' lives. Everyone was miserable. I'm like, screw this. I need to get out of here. I need to do this entrepreneurship thing.
Man. So Cody, like, so 7 months. So what made it 7 months? Not 6 months, not 8 months. Like what? Let's go back to that moment and, you know, take us back to that moment and tell us, you know, what made you decide you need to leave this job and break through into the next phase of your journey as what we call a breakthrough investor?
It's a $1 million question, Charles. I can tell you've done a couple of these before because this was my first big breakthrough moment. So the reason why it was 7 months, not six, not eight, not 12. So at FinCon, the conference that you mentioned in the intro here, financial conference for content creators, I met this guy, Grant Sabatier. He retired at 30. He was kind of a role model of mine. And I'd seen all the stuff he was doing online. Like I was blogging, I was podcasting, but this dude, Grant, was making like you know, 50 grand a month. I'm like, what the hell? I'm making like $200. So he was a role model. I'm like, this guy's awesome. Like, I want to be like him. So I ended up meeting him at FinCon. We ended up chatting at the closing party at that FinCon in 2018. Talked for like 2 hours. Probably the liquor helped us talk a little bit, helped calm my nerves and helped me actually walk up to him and start a conversation, because he was like a big shot in the space.
A quick question, Cody. Yeah. I don't mean to interrupt, but did you also have like a water bottle with alcohol at that time?
Shout out to FinCon. They gave us a free drink tickets.
Oh, okay. So you went early, because they do run out of the tickets after a while. Okay, you went early.
Gotcha. Yeah. They had the free drink tickets. Don't worry, Charles. I wasn't spending my money on drinks yet. Okay. So Grant and I end up chatting and hit off really good. I thought it was like an awesome conversation. Like, imagine you're in a space, no matter whoever's listening. I know you have a lot of real estate listeners, you go up to name one of your favorite influencers on Instagram and you see them at a conference and you go and talk to them and you guys talk for 2 hours. That's what it was like for me with Grant. Like, he was my idol. He was one of these guys that I thought was just awesome. But I ended up talking for 2 hours, had an awesome conversation. He's like, dude, I want to help you out. I love what you're doing. I think I was like 22 at the time. And I was like, literally anything you want, I'll do for free. I just want to work with you by your side. Like, learn the ropes and see how I can make this happen for me. See how I can become a millionaire and financially independent by 30. So he's like, awesome. Just hit me up and we'll figure something out. So I like sent him an email that next day after FinCon. I'm like, oh, it was so awesome meeting you, dude. Like, thank you so much for taking the time to like meet little old me and talk to me for 2 hours. Crickets. Didn't answer me. I'm like, great. So he was just faking. He wasn't actually having a good conversation with me. But so I follow up like maybe a couple days later, hit him up again. I'm like, hey, I know you're probably just getting home from FinCon, flights, all that stuff. Don't worry about it. You can just get back to me when you're free. Crickets. So I wait another week and I hit him up a third time. And I think this is going to be a good lesson, a good breakthrough lesson. Hit him up a third time. He gets back to me within like 5 minutes of the email. He's like, oh, dude, my email inbox is just a mess. Like, I miss stuff all the time. I have hundreds of emails coming in. I have a VA who manages my inbox. This just slipped through the cracks. Yeah, would love to do something with you. I'm like, okay, cool. So the first lesson in there is be repetitive. Like, if you really want something, be persistent. Don't take no for an answer, or don't take a non-answer as a no. Keep following up until you get, no, I don't want to work with you. Then stop bothering them. But so I know this is a long story, but I think it's a valuable one, because this was like a huge decision. So he says, I'm working my corporate job at this time. I want you to help me organize my book tour. So I'm like, okay, what does that mean? He's like, well, I'm going to be speaking in all these different states. Ended up securing like 90 venues in 33 states, 16,000 mile route. He was going to actually drive the book tour. So I'm like, okay, like, I can do that. I basically just made a huge Excel spreadsheet with like 700 venues. It was like libraries, bookstores, event halls, high schools, colleges, all these places. Again, only like probably got like a 20% response rate. And then of the responders, maybe half of those. So it ended up being 90 events in total. And then we get closer to the event. He's like, dude, you want to go on the book tour with me? I was like, are you serious? I thought he was like trolling me. I thought, you know, him and all the other like big personal finance bloggers are like, watch this. Like, I'm on Punk'd or something. And he's like, no, seriously, like, you want to come with me on the tour, be my tour manager? I was like, wow. Yeah, I'd love to. So it ended up being a real offer. Me and Grant are still great friends to this day. But the tour was kicking off in March of 2019. I quit my job January 31st, 2019, which just happened to be pretty much exactly 7 months after I started. And then we went on that book tour, hit 33 states, did 16,000 miles together in a van. And taking that crazy leap was like the first huge breakthrough moment for me. Like, it was such a gamble. I didn't know what I was going to get out of it. And honestly, he didn't really pay me much. Like, he paid me a little bit and he covered my expenses and stuff like that. So it wasn't like, oh, this, you know, rich author just gave me, you know, $500,000 to manage his book tour. But the lessons that he taught me, like the shift in mindset at that point, because before then, I thought making $2,000 online, that was like the be all end all. I'm like, once I get to 2K a month with my blog and podcast, I've made it. And then Grant's like, dude, 2K a month? You should be aiming for like at least 20. I was like, what? That's possible? So just, I feel like he shattered so many of the beliefs that I had. I was just like smashing through glass ceiling after glass ceiling. And especially after living with this guy for 3 months, like my perspective on money and time and just basically what I had, like my assets just completely changed after that 3 months, that 3 month journey. So that was a huge breakthrough for me. Long answer. Sorry about that.
That was amazing. Like, seriously, that answer, man, that's so cool. And that kind of like, you know, brings me into the next question is mentorship. Like, how important is it for our listeners listening right now to have a mentor in order to break through to that next level? Like you mentioned, you know, your experience with that mentor. So I know you think it's important, but how important is it? And how can our listeners find a mentor? What are some steps they can find a mentor?
Mentorship is everything. I don't want to say you can't have breakthroughs without it, but if you're stuck surrounded by the same people who are doing the same things, like you don't even have the opportunity to see what's possible. And so for me, it was just like kind of, I got to lift my head above the clouds for a second and see that like, wow, there are people doing this. There are people making $1 million a year. There are people retiring when they're 30 years old. And without kind of getting into that community, I would have never known that. So you do have to kind of break out of your circle, I think, to make breakthroughs. I'm sure there are some exceptions, but it's a lot easier if you have a mentor to kind of pull you up by your bootstraps and show you the path, because it's scary kind of navigating stuff alone. I used to always be a DIY guy. Now, if I'm learning something new, like I will try to find, and I'm willing to pay for someone who's an expert in that field to shortcut so I can just not make all those mistakes, because it's so easy to just be like, I don't want to pay for that, or I don't have time to find a mentor. I'm just going to DIY. I'm just going to Google and YouTube, figure it out. And it might take you 50 hours and you could have had a 45 minute phone call with an expert in the field. And that same thing could have taken you an hour. And whether it's money or time or just like networking, it's worth it.
Yeah.
But so, to directly answer your question, Charles, like how to find a mentor, I mean, find someone in your field, find someone who you admire. Like I mentioned before, find the Instagram person. Now they can't be too big. They can't be too many steps above you, because then they probably won't answer. But if you can find someone who's a couple steps above where you are and you can figure out a way to deliver value for them, and this kind of, I'm going to use that, the analogy of the book tour. The only reason Grant hired me on was I wasn't asking for anything. I didn't know I was going to get anything returned. I had no idea that I would have all these mental breakthroughs, but I just told him, hey, I will organize your entire book tour for free, just because I want the mentorship. So it might not be a book tour for you, but maybe maybe they have a podcast and they're not doing social. They're not clipping up their podcast into shorts. I'm just thinking about that because we're literally recording a podcast right now. I was asking you before we hit go, are we going to clip this into shorts? Maybe you admire someone who's in the real estate space or whatever space you might be interested in who's not doing that. You go and you clip their stuff up and make it for free. And you're like, here's a Dropbox file full of 20 clips that I made, 20 awesome clips from the past 5 episodes. You are just dumping value on that person, and they are so much more likely to then want to mentor you and want to talk to you and want to help you, rather than the cold email or the cold LinkedIn message or Twitter message like, hey, can I pick your brain for a minute? That never works. So you gotta lead with value, and then you can kind of extract some of the value back from that mentor that you're seeking. And it's not gonna work 100% of the time. Don't get discouraged if you do that. You create 20 shorts for someone, you put it in a Dropbox file, you send it to them and you never hear back. That'll happen, but it's part of the game. Like, it's a numbers game. You're just going to keep trying and trying and trying. Once you give enough, I promise you will get eventually.
Wow, that's awesome. So how'd you go from organizing somebody's book tour to getting into buying real estate? Like, how did that happen?
Good question. So while this is happening, I had started a podcast back in the end of 2018, before FinCon though. So I already had the podcast when I met Grant. And the podcast is the Financial Independence Show, as you mentioned earlier, Charles. And on the podcast, basically, we were just interviewing people, like different paths to financial independence. So this person, went the W-2 path. They saved up a nest egg. They used the 4% rule and they retired that way. This person, bought a bunch of short-term rentals, retired that way. This person did long-term rentals. This person does dividend stocks, yada, yada, yada. We just had so many people on the podcast who had retired from real estate. It was like a broken record. I'm like, oh, another person who retired with real estate in 3 years or whatever. Like, why am I not doing this? And so after a couple years of interviewing people and probably having 20 to 30 real estate investors on who had retired extremely quickly, or at least reached financial independence extremely quickly after starting their real estate journey, I'm like, I feel like I'm smart enough to try this. Like, I might get it wrong. I'm not going to be perfect, but let's just dive in head first. So end of 2020, middle of 2020, I just started scouring the market. I got hooked up with a realtor who's a friend of mine, set me up with like MLS listings. I gave her certain zip codes. I was like, I want multifamily and these zip codes with this price point, with these features. I would get like emails every morning and just started the property hunt. I started to like understand like, okay, these are the things I should look for. These are the price points in this area. I toured some properties. So I was starting to get a feel for like, oh, this boiler is about to explode, or this foundation is going to crumble in the next 20 years. And things like that, just started getting my reps in. Finally closed on our first property in September of 2020. So it's probably like 3 months of research, quite honestly. And I was kind of getting discouraged because we kept looking and we put offers in, we get beat out, but got that first property in September of 2020. But the reason why we did it was just because so many other people were doing it. And I'm like, this person's not that much smarter than me. Like, there's no way that they're like just so many leagues above me in intelligence that I can't do this. And yeah, that the rest is kind of history.
That's awesome.
That's completely awesome. And I love how you have the timeline too. I'm following along. And so I'm just curious to know, man, so you got into real estate and then like what made you got into the digital product space? I mean, when we think of that, you know, a lot of people, you know, I don't think it's as popular as real estate, but it's becoming popular and there's a lot of money to be made in that space. And you're a huge testament of that. So what got you into that space and how has it changed your life, man?
Yeah. So rewind again. I started selling digital products in 2018. A lot of this stuff started in 2018, but it didn't become successful until I had some of these mental breakthroughs, I think. So I think I love the premise of the podcast because a lot of the stuff that holds people back, it's not the know-how. It's just like, you don't think it's possible until you do it. And so you meet that mentor, you meet that person. Like I remember meeting people with, you know, 50 properties and they were my age. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, what am I doing? I just got my first one. I ended up actually getting 11 units in that first calendar year, which was kind of, I think I bit off a little bit more than I could chew. But back to digital products. Back to digital products. The reason why I liked digital products so much, I came from the physical product space. I mentioned I had that disc golf manufacturing company in college. And it was a nightmare. It was shipping, inventory, logistics, manufacturing. Like there were just so many elements of the process that could go wrong. And then my friend Julie, which is a kind of another breakthrough moment, she ended up introducing me to digital products. She was selling on Etsy. And basically with a digital product or a printable, I use the terms interchangeably. Think of like tracker or a calendar or a planner, or you guys might have like a social media kit or a podcast media kit, or there's so many different business to business templates. Like realtors are all using these different pieces of paper that, you know, it might be like a closing checklist. It might be this checklist, that checklist. There's thousands of different digital product ideas. But the cool part is once you create it, that's it. Like then you just list it on whatever platform you're selling, like Etsy or Shopify or WooCommerce or any of these other ones, and it gets automatically delivered to the customer. So coming from the Tim Ferriss world of I want to build something once and sell it forever rather than trade my time, because before I was like freelancing and doing all these things where I wouldn't get paid unless I did work. So the digital products was a space where I could create the digital product, I could put it on a marketplace, I could market it, and then the work between or the difference in work from selling one digital product or 1,000 was nothing. Because the delivery is on the platform side. So all I had to do is create it, market it, and then there's no additional work needed for me if I'm going to sell, you know, one unit or 1,000 units. So I just kind of became obsessed. I know you mentioned before in the intro, I made $700 in 1 week. That was in the beginning of 2019. And after that, I was like, okay, this is pretty cool. I wasn't working in my shop. I was actually skiing in Lake Tahoe that week that I made $700. I'm a Valentine's baby. So we always do some trip for my birthday and we were skiing Lake Tahoe that whole week. Didn't even have my laptop. And by the end of the week, I made like $700 from stuff that I had created in December and January. So wow. I was like, this is pretty cool. This is pretty cool. So
how much did that cost to get started, like to create something and do the marketing?
The cost is time. The cost is just creating the products, like especially on a marketplace like Etsy. It's like Amazon, where if you learn keyword research and SEO and you have the right title and tags and description, like the buyers come to you if you have your product set up correctly.
But you're not producing anything. You're not actually going and making let's say that checklist of paper or whatever. So somebody else will actually do all the shipping and everything for you?
No shipping. So with these digital products, it's literally a file. Like imagine, I'm just selling you like a PDF or I'm selling you some kind of a digital template that you can use in your computer. So you're literally clicking a download button. Nothing is coming to your house physically. There's no paper involved. Like you're just paying me, say, $5 for like a checklist or a template or a planner, one of these things. And there might be 1,000 other Williams who need that same thing. And all of a sudden, I have this, you know, $5 product that just made me $5,000 that took me 3 hours to create.
Dude, this William is not mind blowing.
Oh my God. Hang on,
we're gonna have to check out this course because you know William and I are also going through that phase where we're both we're not working the jobs right now, and so we've got real estate, thank God for that, and some other things going on, and so that could be like a really good path for us to go to, William.
Yeah, we should talk offline about that with Cody.
Well, we could talk offline, but we could talk a little bit online too, because, I mentioned earlier that he has a course and a program. Like, tell us more about that, because I think I'm super interested to know more about it, but give us a brief overview about that course that you have to help people, sort of did what you did.
Yeah, I just want to take a step back before I talk about the course and all that stuff. But I think that people have these printables, digital downloads, digital products that they already use in their day-to-day life that they could easily turn into a monetizable product. Like, I don't know about you guys, maybe you have some real estate, like property vetting spreadsheet where maybe it's taking the purchase price and it has like the, you know, average, the expected rent, and here is like the vacancy allowance, and here's the maintenance and all that stuff. If other people don't have that, like, you can turn that into a marketable product and then sell it to your audience. Like, there's a lot of instances where people are already using these types of things that they created for themselves, and then they could just go and sell it. Like, for me, I have a podcast as well. And when we were like pitching sponsors and stuff, we built out this really nice like podcast media kit. So I ended up basically like turning that into a template on Canva, putting it in my Etsy shop, and that product has now made a bunch of sales because other people wanted the same style media kit. They didn't want to create it from scratch like I did. And so I already did the work. I just basically put the work on a marketplace that people can buy. So I think people, like, it might sound daunting, like, oh, I have to go and create this digital product, or I have to go and create this printable, but you might already have stuff that you already use. Like, you might already have some kind of a daily tracker. You might already have like a water intake tracker or a workout log, or just something to keep your social media organized that you created yourself. Like, there's so many instances where people will come to me, they're like, oh, this seems too hard. And then I'll ask them this question. They'll be like, oh yeah, well, I do have this and this and this. I'm like, exactly. You can turn that into a monetizable product. But to answer your question more directly, Charles, yeah, basically I had success selling digital products. My co-founder in the company, I'm repping Gold City Ventures, my shirt right now, she had success selling digital products, and we would just get question after question, like on social media from friends, or like, they didn't understand it. And it's kind of like this conversation now. Like, it's when you first realize that this is a thing, it's kind of mind blowing. And so we just kept having these conversations over and over and over again. And so we're like, let's just kind of make a more formal program out of this, because I'm so sick of having a 2-hour long phone call with friends who want to learn about this in a one-on-one capacity. Like, let's just put all our knowledge together in a really nice put together way. And then we can just sell this thing and, you know, give it away and give the knowledge that has taken us years to learn into like a step-by-step follow along course. So yeah, basically what it does is teach you how to do the market research, and then how to actually create the products, and then how to market and sell the products.
I would definitely be one of your 2-hour phone calls.
I had a lot of them, man. That's why we built the course.
William, you would be.
100%.
I think I would be like an hour and a half. Because, you know, I give you like you know, give me 2 hours and then I'll give you 30 minutes back at the end.
Yeah. Perfect. Thanks, guys.
I love it. Oh, man. So this is great, man. Like, hearing your story and that journey, and gosh, there's so much more to share in such little time. But during that journey, I'm sure you had some challenges along the way. Can you share the biggest mind challenge you had to go through so that you could be break through to be a successful investor?
I think I'm going to answer this in two ways. I think to be a successful entrepreneur, I had to get over imposter syndrome, especially early on when I was like 22, 23. I'm 27 now, about to turn 28. But I would get hate comments, people like, you know, what are you talking about, kid? And it would be from a 40-year-old in, you know, $100,000 of debt. And my net worth was like 500K at the time. It's like, I'm doing so much better financially than them, but just because I'm younger than them, they don't want to take any of my advice. And so like, that kind of got to me. It got under my skin, quite honestly. And so I had to really get over the imposter syndrome. Like, am I really qualified to talk about any of this stuff? Like, there's people making $1 million a year with digital products. Like, who's little old me to talk about digital products? Or I only have 11 units. Like, should I even be talking about real estate investing? Or, you know, my net worth is, you know, only $1 million or whatever. There's all these people, you know, Warren Buffett's net worth is $90 billion. Like, am I qualified to talk about this stuff? So imposter syndrome is huge for me, man. I really had to overcome that. But how I did kind of come to terms with it was, I mean, people oftentimes don't want to learn about someone who's like 87 rungs up the ladder than them. They want to learn from someone who looks like them, talks like them, might be a couple steps ahead, but I'm not like that far ahead of the average person, or I wasn't that far ahead of the average person when I started my journey. So I was like, okay, well, you know, actually I might be better than Warren Buffett for this person to learn about investing. I might be better than Grant Cardone for this person to talk about real estate investing, because I'm just talking about getting a duplex. He's talking about buying a 500 unit commercial building. So that's kind of how I got over imposter syndrome, but that was absolutely huge for me, man. I think another thing with investing, and the reason I learned this lesson was from that first business, that disc golf manufacturing company, was learning to kind of embrace failure and not hate it. And I feel like, especially in America, we are taught to not be losers. Like, everyone gets a trophy and it's almost shameful if you don't win. Like, if you have a failure, it's like, you know, you're putting your head down, you're covering your face with your sweatshirt. But man, like, I have learned the most from my failures. Like, the things that go wrong, those are the things that I can then turn into future lessons and learn, and it's building blocks. So if I were to just, you know, be a smashing success with everything I did. I would never learn anything new. And I think that was a big hurdle I had to overcome. And then to answer your question about investing directly, it made me more comfortable with losing. Like, if this investment goes sour, it's gonna be an awesome learning lesson. Like, maybe these tenants are gonna suck. Maybe I shouldn't have bought this property because I didn't do the right due diligence, but it's gonna be a great learning lesson down the road. And I definitely won't make that mistake again if it's some huge costly mistake when it comes to investing. So yeah.
I absolutely agree with that. Just from my experience, just doing the real estate that I've been doing, the amount of people that have said, oh, we lost so much money and all this other stuff, all the naysayers, but I think they were really, now that I'm listening to all these other people and yourself included, Cody, is just they were really afraid to fail. They were afraid to fail. And I really think that's the answer. If you're not afraid to fail, you're going to grow. If you just keep getting up and keep dusting yourself off and go for it, you're going to succeed at some point and you're going to learn a lot along the way.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a cultural thing, man. Like I said, it's the everyone gets a trophy mentality. I don't know when that started. I don't think it was like that maybe 20 or 30 years ago, but it's almost like you can't fail. And like getting an F on a test is like the worst thing ever. Like, maybe you should get an F on a test every once in a while. Like, it'll teach you that, hey, you didn't study hard enough. Like, you need to learn this lesson. And I think a lot of people would be a lot better if they were more comfortable failing. Like, the hard truth is people don't really care about you as much as you might think. Like, you think everyone on social media, your family, your friends, there might be a couple that care about your well-being, but they don't care if you mess up. Like, you're the one who's going to care the most over a mess up. You're going to one who's going to be beating yourself over the head like, oh, I'm so stupid, I shouldn't have done that. People really, in all honesty, only care about themselves at the end of the day. So that was a hard truth that I had to swallow too. I was like, oh yeah, so many people care about like what I'm doing. If I fail, it's going to be so embarrassing. And then you fail and nobody bats an eye.
Yeah, man, that's so true, man. I totally agree with what you're saying. And it's amazing how you overcome the imposter syndrome, the failures and everything that you went through to shape you into who you are today, man. I think that's fantastic, man. And, you know, there's so much to talk about, but what is the biggest advice that you would give to someone who's trying to be a breakthrough investor, just like you, beyond getting started? Getting started is the first step, but sometimes it's hard to do. What would you advise people who want to be a breakthrough investor? How can they get going?
I think breaking things down into micro goals is a really helpful thing, because some people will be like, I want to quit my job. I want to replace my salary. And let's say they're making $100,000. If you just say, I want to replace my salary, like, that's not a tactical game plan. But if you're like, I want to replace my salary, I'm going to buy cash flowing real estate, and every single duplex that I buy is going to cash flow, you know, $500 a month. Let's see if I can do some mental math. I'm currently making, what's 100 divided by 12? It's like 8,300 a month or something like that. So I'm going to need, you know, 16 duplexes in order to replace that $100,000 job. So now it's a lot more tangible, right? Because it's like, okay, yeah, I just got one duplex. Check. I need another duplex and another duplex. And now when you break it into micro goals, it seems so much more manageable. And that's what I tell a lot of people with the digital products too. People are like, why would I want to, you know, spend 2 hours creating a product I'm going to sell for $5? Because that's like a pretty average price for some of the digital products, especially like a one pager or a couple pages. It's like, well, yeah, it's you're selling it for $5, but those $5 add up. Like, if you're like in that example earlier, when I was talking about you, William, if you buy one of my things for $5, but there's 1,000 other people who need that same thing, that's $5,000. It adds up so quick. I mean, all it takes to make an extra $1,000 a month is $33 a day. So if you start breaking things down into micro goals, it becomes a lot more attainable. And I think it's kind of getting that snowball rolling. Momentum is everything. If you just have this huge, big, hairy, audacious goal, like the replace my salary, and you haven't started a side hustle yet, it's going to seem next to impossible. But if you start getting those wheels turning, then things start to become more attainable if you set those micro goals.
I love it. And because, you know, there's some people that say set, you know, small micro goals. And then some people like, you know, you have to have a 10X goal, you know, you have to have this big goal. And so
you can have both.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But I love how you mentioned small goals. I'm the same way too, Cody. I like to start with the small goals, because small goals, so a big goal is just the sum total of a bunch of small goals, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is awesome, man. Gosh, I shoes. William, I think we need to just cancel the other episodes.
Yeah, let's just keep this one going. The thing is, we feel that about most of them. Actually, all of them.
I know. That is so good. Yeah. Like, yeah, I are like selfishly gleaning like so much wisdom, but I think the audience is going to glean a lot. Like I told you all, like William, I told you, William, you know, Cody has so much wisdom at such a young age. Can you imagine how he'll be when he's like 40 years old? You know?
No, but if he wants to invite me out to go somewhere, I'll be there. So
yeah. Awesome, man.
Cody, what's something that maybe like we have missed? Like what's something that you think our audience should think about or something maybe we've missed as far as being a breakthrough investor from how you see it?
So I'm going to talk to the younger audience members for a second because I kind of wish someone told me this like more directly, but bust your ass, like grind your ass off for the beginning of your 20s, your late teens. Because compound interest is insane. I'll give you like a real number. So if you can get, so there's this, let me rewind. There's this thing called the rule of 72. The rule of 72 states that you divide 72 by your expected rate of return. And that's how long it's going to take for your money to double. So you can use this with real estate returns, with stock market returns, whatever you want. Let's just use 10% so my brain doesn't explode doing math on a live podcast. So 72 divided by 10, you can expect your money to double about every 7 years or so. So let's say you get $1 million invested by age 30. I know that sounds crazy. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it is possible. It's totally possible, especially if you start in your like early 20s. So you get $1 million by age 30. You don't even, let's say you don't even invest anymore. You just check out. You're done. You're just picking up some random side hustle. You're working at Starbucks just to cover your expenses and you're just letting this money compound. So let's do some mental math together. You're 30 with $1 million. When you're 37, 7 years later, that becomes $2 million. When you're 44, 7 years later, that becomes $4 million. When you're 51, then that becomes $8 million. When you're 58, that becomes $16 million. And when you're 65, so retirement age, you have $32 million. All from starting with getting $1 million invested by 30. We'll have to double check my math because I was doing that live, but hopefully you guys were fact checking me there, or at least checking my doubling. I might have skipped four or something. It's either 16 or 32, one of those. Who cares? Either way.
It sounded good. The power.
Yeah. It's a big amount. It's a good amount you can
either
retire.
16 or 32 million, whatever that shook out to. Again, I'm doing live math on a podcast. Doesn't always shake out, but it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And that's without contributing anything else, assuming those 10% returns that I mentioned. So like, get started early. If you're listening to this and you're in your 20s, my God, like live as frugally as possible. Share a room with someone. Drive a crappy car. Don't go out to eat all the time. Don't go to the bars all the time. Like, don't deprive yourself. Don't live a horrible life. But you can do little hacky things like I did. And, you know, no one's going to ask about that water ball in your pocket.
We might now.
I was going to mention it if you didn't mention it, man.
But there are so many ways. This is, I guess, one thing that I haven't talked about, like the power of having low expenses while you can, before you have a family, before you have responsibilities, while you're still quote unquote living like a college kid. Like right when I got out of college, I know I mentioned I lived at home for 7 months, but then I moved to Boston. People were like, oh, Boston, super high cost living area. I shared a room with my friend. I could have touched his finger while he was sleeping. Our beds were that close to each other. I paid $450 a month in rent. I drove the same paid off car that I've been driving forever. I was super intentional about my grocery budget. I was doing the alcohol hack that I was telling you guys about. So I was even living in Boston. I was still spending like sub $1,500 a month and I was working a full-time job. And then I quit that, but I was working a full-time job, making like a full-time entrepreneurial income, doing the side hustle stuff. So I was just banking all of that. And I think there's so much value in keeping the biggest gap possible between your income and your expenses while you're young and while you can make those sacrifices. Because people who are like, in their 40s, even 30s, and they're like, well, I can't do that. I have kids, whatever. Fine. I mean, you still can do some of this stuff when you have kids, but I get it. But if you're in your 20s listening to this, you're solo, even if you have a partner. But if you're in your 20s and you can sacrifice, man, sacrifice, because it's going to be well worth it when that compound interest hits and you can use that rule of 72. And you can map this out for yourself. Just see how much your money's going to be in when you're 65 years old if you stack up cash for a couple of years and it keeps on doubling.
That's
awesome, man.
That's great. There's a couple of young guys that I meet with on occasion here where I'm at, and they are 19, 20 years old. One of them starting their own business. And this is all I've been preaching to them. Because if I had somebody tell me this when I was their age, I don't even know where I would be at right now. And I want them to be super successful. And I'm glad to hear that somebody else has got the same advice. Awesome.
Yes.
Smart minds think alike.
I know. This has been fantastic, Cody, man. I know I continue to follow you and I love talking to you, but people are going to hear this episode. They're going to want to listen to you online. How can they find you and how can they connect with you?
Yeah. So if you're interested in the digital product stuff, I'm repping right here on my t-shirt. GoldCityVentures.com is all my digital product stuff. If you enjoy hearing me talk about money and financial independence and passive income, check me out on my podcast. It's the Financial Independence Show, wherever you listen to podcasts. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Awesome, man. Cody, thank you so much for being on the show and hoping to see you soon, man.